You might assume the best food joints are found in big cities, but one Illinois tourism professor says when it comes to barbecue, that's simply not the case.
From my experience, I found the best barbecue in the most unassuming places. If we take the trouble to drive off the beaten path a little bit, to explore outside of big urban centers, we're going to be surprised with the phenomenal quality of barbecue throughout the state.
To get you ready for Labor Day weekend, we're going to take a trip across Illinois to get the best places for barbecue. We also get tips from the experts for those of you at home wanting to up your barbecue game in preparation for the holiday weekend. But first, the beloved T-Rex Sioux will no longer be the first dinosaur you see when you walk into Chicago's Field Museum. Sioux's moving to a new gallery next year. We're going to check in with the museum to learn more about their big plans. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. The latest news is next. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's September 1st. It's Labor Day weekend. We're going to get you ready for the holiday. Talking about barbecue coming up later on in the hour. We want to hear from you where your favorite barbecue places are in Illinois. We're going to be speaking to a couple chefs as well. They're going to be giving us tips. So that's coming up later on. But first, big news in the dinosaur and museum world. Sioux the dinosaur, the famous 40-foot-long fossil of a Tyrannosaurus rex who greets you just inside Chicago's Field Museum, is moving. Earlier this week, museum staff announced that Sioux will soon be relocated to make room for a new Titanosaur, which is just as big as its name sounds. It's roughly two accordion-sized Chicago buses end-to-end. Joining us on the line to talk about the impending move is Field Museum paleontologist Bill Simpson, who's known Sioux ever since Sioux first landed at the Field Museum nearly 20 years ago. Hey, Bill, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, Nyla. I'm glad to be here.
So, Bill, this is the first time Sioux is not going to be on display in her traditional spot within the Field Museum, Stanley Field Hall, in nearly two decades. I have to say, if I could share on the radio the crestfallen face of my six-year-old niece when I told her the news earlier this week that Sioux was moving, she said the first thing, she was looked very sad, and then she just said, where is she going? So maybe before we even get to where Sioux's going, I have to ask, was this a hard decision for you guys?
I don't think so, because we're going to be able to make some alterations and some corrections and some updates to Sioux. You know, science moves forward, and we know more about T-Rex than we did back in 2000. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're putting her into the exhibit hall that she was originally supposed to go into. And she'll be exhibited in a different way from the way she is in Stanley Field Hall. There will be more information, more science in her own exhibit hall. Will sort of put her back into her Cretaceous ecosystem.
So we'll get to those changes in just a minute, but I want to ask you a little bit about the dinosaur who's replacing her. I hear this is going to be a pretty large. Can you give us a sense of how big a Titanosaur really was?
Well, the group Titanosaurs include they're one of the sauropods, the long neck, long tail dinosaurs. And they're a really interesting group of sauropods because they include both the smallest sauropods and the very largest, which is the one that's coming into Stanley Field Hall, Patagotitan maiorum. It's 122 feet long. So, for example, it's four times as long as Sioux. And we figure in life it would have weighed something like 70 tons, which makes it seven or eight times as heavy as Sioux. So it's really a monster. It's the largest land animal that ever lived.
And is this by that sense, the largest dinosaur ever uncovered?
Absolutely. Yep.
Wow. Okay. And how are visitors going to be able to interact with the Titanosaur?
Well, this is a cast. The original is in Argentina, although we have some of the original bones on loan to us for 2 years so people can see what some of the original bones look like. But because this is a cast, unlike Sioux, where the public can't go right up to it, they will be able to go right up and touch this cast. And it's such a large dinosaur, they'll be able to walk right underneath the belly of it without crouching.
Are there other titanosaurs on display in the U.S.?
There are. In fact, Field Museum has one of the very first that was ever put on display. It's a juvenile of Rapetusaurus, which was found in Madagascar. Sauropods were the last group of sauropods to live before the big Cretaceous extinction. And the one from Madagascar was one of the very last of them. This big one from Argentina, Patagotitan, is from an earlier part of the Cretaceous. It's about 102 million years old.
So in the timeline, a titanosaur have interacted with a T-Rex?
No. T-Rex was one of what we call the terminal taxa, which means it was one of the last species of dinosaurs before the extinction happened. And also, it's a North American form. And Patagotitan is an Argentinian dinosaur, and so they were separated not just by time, but also space.
And so now they're being reunited in Chicago for the first time, I guess we should say. Now, can you explain a little bit more about, as you mentioned, Sue's not just moving, she's getting a makeover in a couple of different big ways. For one, visitors will eventually be able to see Sue with a much larger bulging belly. Why is that, Bill?
Well, there are bones from Sue's skeleton that we didn't mount back in 2000. And that's largely because we weren't exactly sure how they went into the skeleton. But we know now. These bones are called the gastralium or gastralia or gastral basket. They look like ribs, but they're in the belly, not the chest. They articulate with the real ribs. But when we add those to the skeleton, it's really going to give the public a very clear idea of what the belly outline looks like. And Sue's a big dinosaur, and she has this big bulging belly, which, you know, without the gastralia, most people don't really think about. So, yeah, it'll change the look of her for sure.
And her posture is going to change as well. Why is that? Can you explain the posture adjustment and why that's happening?
Well, we think we've got her maybe crouching just a little bit too much. So we're going to straighten out the right knee. We're going to move the right leg away from the midline of the body to compensate for some crushing in the hip area. So those are a couple of the changes to the posture.
Okay. And is that just because since you're moving, you're just planning to put a little bit more space into her? Or is it just sort of...
No, we're just trying to make some corrections that you know, when you mount a dinosaur, it's a very expensive process. And for Sue, when we mounted her originally, it was a $2 million process. You don't often get a redo. And so we're really excited about having the opportunity to fix some of the things that we would like to fix and also things that we didn't know about back in 2000.
And speaking of which, this is part of this is this both not just the renovation and being able to fix Sue, but then also mounting this new titanosaur. Where are you guys getting the funding for that?
Ken Griffin, the Kenneth C. Griffin Charitable Fund. Ken Griffin has been a fantastic supporter of dinosaur science at Field Museum for a long time. Our fossil halls were financed by Ken Griffin, the Griffin Halls of Evolving Planet. They opened in 2006. And the dinosaur hall that Sue is going to be moved into is part of or will become part of Evolving Planet. So, yeah, he's been a really important person to Field Museum. It's one of the this gift is $16.5 million. It's one of the largest gifts to a Chicago museum ever. So we're very excited.
And was that, I imagine, also, was it tough to, I imagine, for the financing to acquire this new titanosaur? Is that something that's kind of a competitive process with other museums?
Well, there's only one other cast. It's on exhibit at the American Museum in New York. It's not really competitive, but we underwrote the making of a second cast, and we've been lucky enough to borrow some of the real bones. So it'll be a great exhibit, I think.
And does this titanosaur have a name?
Not yet.
Okay.
We don't quite know what if she will acquire a nickname or not.
Okay.
We've got to get to know her better at first.
You have to get to know
her. We have no idea what the gender is, of course.
Right. And so we don't know yet whether or not, because I feel like Sue is very active on Twitter. I don't know if we feel like we're going to leave Twitter to Sue's domain in the new titanosaur. Maybe we'll pick up Snapchat some other social media. We don't really know yet that either. Is this
we'll
something?
See if Patagotitan had something to say.
Is this something that the Field Museum naming this dinosaur? Is that going to be something the public's going to be involved with? Or have you guys figured that out yet?
I don't think that we figured that one out yet.
Okay. What more can we, in terms of the Titanosaur, you were telling us a little bit. Can you explain a little bit more about just the size of this and what it will look like, what the cast will look like when you go into the Field Museum?
Yeah. It'll be at the north end of Stanley Field Hall, which is our big main Great Hall, as they're called. And I think one of the cool things about this is that Stanley Field Hall is one of the largest exhibit halls in any museum. And it's sort of an ideal place to put the world's largest dinosaur. At the American Museum, where the other cast of Padocatitan is, it doesn't even quite fit in the room they have. The head has to stick out into another exhibit hall. But in Stanley Field Hall, which is 300 feet long and 70-foot ceilings, you'll really be able to step away from this dinosaur if you want to get it, you know, see it in perspective. So I think that'll be a really cool thing. And having it in Stanley Field Hall, I think, will really let the public get a sense for just how big the biggest dinosaur is.
Bob, what's the timeline Oh, sorry, go ahead. You were going to add something else about
it. I was just going to mention one more thing. We're going to mount it, pose it a little differently from the copy that's in New York. We're going to raise the head up to the second floor, so the head will be looking at the mezzanine, the second floor mezzanine around Stanley Field Hall, so our visitors who are up in the mezzanine can come face to face with Padocatitan.
Bill, is that where Sue's head is now? Am I thinking of the same location?
That's on the mezzanine. It'll be in a little different part of the mezzanine, but yeah, that's the mezzanine is one of the Sue's head is one of the things that's on the mezzanine now, and Sue's skull. The Sue's head will move in with the rest of Sue's skeleton into the new exhibit hall.
But Sue's, because of the weight issue, I imagine Sue's actual skull will not be mounted in the exhibit hall. Is that the same issue?
That's the reason that's often given. And in fact, I think our own labeling says that, but it's not really a weight issue. The skull is the most studied part of a dinosaur. And the same is true with Sue. So, we wouldn't want to mount it, you know, 13 feet up in the air. It would just be too hard to study. So, yeah, what's on the end of the neck is actually a cast of Sue's skull.
Ah, okay. So maybe when you move it, you'll change the labeling to say that, because I feel like I've read that it says it's too heavy to mount.
It's this explanation I can't seem to kill.
Bill, what's the timeline for all of these changes taking place?
So Sue will come down in February of 2018, and she will be moved, and her armature, the metal that holds her together, she'll be moved directly up into the new exhibit hall. And in the spring of 2019, she will be unveiled. But in between, we're planning to have some sort of device, maybe peepholes or something, so the public can sort of watch the progress as Sue is put back together.
Bill, as someone who's the collections manager of fossil vertebrae, you're the head of geological collections for the Field Museum. Is 2018 going to be a very harrowing year for you moving this, or is this going to be something that I imagine it's a delicate thing, this in a huge project as well.
Well, we've gone through it before. I was in charge of the preparation of Sue, so. You know, I feel like we know what we're doing. We've done it before. We've hired a company, RCI from Canada, who's mounted many dinosaurs. So everyone involved is extremely experienced. So, no, I'm not worried about it. It's exciting. It's our 125th anniversary, and things are just going to get better.
I want to ask you just a personal question about what point you knew you wanted to become a paleontologist. I imagine that's something, because I just feel like there's lots of budding paleontologists who are running around the Field Museum, but not everyone who comes to visit ends up in your job.
Well, my story is very common to vertebrate paleontologists. I got interested as a little kid. I was a dinosaur nerd, and I just never outgrew it. I grew up in Winnetka, the northern suburb of Chicago, and my mother bought me the obligate bag of plastic dinosaurs and dinosaur books, took me to Field Museum, and I just never looked back.
Have you guys been surprised this week, Bill, at the outpouring of the news about Sue and people being alarmed, first of all, that if maybe Sue was going away and now maybe understanding that she's just moving upstairs? Is it surprising to you?
You know, I think T. Rex is arguably the most famous fossil, maybe rivaled by Archaeopteryx. And with the advent of the Jurassic World, Jurassic Park movies, T-Rex became just even more popular. And Sue, being the largest, most complete, you know, best example of this dinosaur, I think you could make a good argument for Sue being the most famous fossil in the world. So, no, we weren't really surprised. We knew that there would be a lot of interest. Any time we do anything with Sue, there's a lot of interest. But something as major as this, no, we knew it would be a big deal.
Yeah. We should remind everybody about the Titanosaur, obviously, as we're thinking about T-Rexes. I think lots of people know about their diets as predators. The Titanosaur also a predator or plant eating?
No, they were plant eaters. All the sauropods were herbivorous. So they're very different from, and you know, just like elephants are much larger than lions, these plant eating sauropods were much larger than the largest meat eating dinosaurs.
Right. So good thing it's the largest ever thing in the world that it's a plant-eating thing, right? Well, thanks so much for joining us. It's Bill Simpson. He's the collections manager of fossil vertebrae. He's the head of geological collections for the Field Museum, filling us in on the timeline and new changes ahead of the Field Museum's big anniversary coming up next year. Bill, thanks so much. We really appreciate you being here with us.
Thanks a lot, Nyla.
Coming up, we're going to be talking about barbecue, and we'd love to hear from you. What are your favorite places to eat barbecue across Illinois? Give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, and stay tuned to the 21st. Nyla Boodoo on this ahead of Labor Day version of the 21st. Thanks for tuning in. It's Friday with the holiday weekend just around the corner. We thought we'd take some time on the program to talk about barbecue. For those who've been manning their barbecues all summer, we know this is the one weekend that for many think is their final hurrah on that front. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by a few chefs from some of the most popular barbecue places around Illinois. They're going to discuss what makes their food unique. They're going to share tips for those of you at home who want to up your barbecue game. If you have questions for them, you can give us a call. For those of you planning on driving around the state this weekend, why not stop for barbecue? To give you some advice, I'm joined now by Nuno Ribeiro, who's a huge barbecue fan, who's also an assistant professor of recreation, sport, and tourism at the University of Illinois. Nuno, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks, Nyla. It's a pleasure to be back.
Also joining us is David Rowe, who's board member of the Illinois Barbecue Society. David, thanks for being with us as well.
Good morning, Nyla. Thank you for having me.
And all of you who are listening, we'd love to hear from you about your favorite barbecue spots in Illinois. Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to us at 21STShow. Nuno, let's start with you. I think we should start off by acknowledging Illinois is not widely known as a barbecue state. And if you were going to look for good barbecue, lots of people think you have to head to either St. Louis, which certainly has that reputation, or Chicago. And I wanted to ask your opinion if you think about what your opinion is about if our closest big cities are the only places to find good barbecue in Illinois.
No. There's no doubt there's a very fine barbecue to be found in both Chicago and St. Louis, but you have numerous places throughout the state that have excellent, superlative even barbecue that you can find sometimes in the smallest of places.
And Nuno, when did you first become a fan of barbecue?
Well, I moved to Illinois about 3 years ago. I think I've always been a fan of barbecue, no matter where it is made, provided it's good. I have no prejudice of any kind in regard to barbecue. I like all kinds. And I'm a bit of a foodie, so whenever I hear about a place that might have good food, I'm definitely willing to travel and to make the effort and sometimes get to know the location. I travel a lot for my work. And I had a friend who happens to be from Paxton, my good friend and colleague, Sally Marshall said, hey, you know, I'm from Paxson. There's a place there opened up that's really, really good. And it was the Humble Hog. And I went there, and I've been a fan ever since. And I've just been expanding the radius of my barbecue forays, which I might say very positive and very delightful successes.
Throughout Central Illinois. Well, we want to hear from those of you from all parts of the state where you're listening. The Humble Hog is going to be, Benjamin Grice is going to be joining us later on in the hour. He's the owner and chef of the Humble Hog in Paxton. Paxton's about 30 miles north of Champaign for folks who are wondering about that. And everybody can chime in with their favorite barbecue throughout the state if you call us at 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet it as well. Our handle is 21STShow. David, what does the Illinois Barbecue Society do?
Well, our focus is primarily on education and supporting the backyard barbecue enthusiast, the barbecue pitmaster, and just generally raising the level of education of barbecue in Illinois. As Nuno said, it's not known as a barbecue state in the past, which is a little bit unfortunate because Illinois actually has a rich history of very strong barbecue presence. Everything from the Weber Grill based in Illinois to Sweet Baby Ray's sauce came out of Illinois, along with a number of other noted barbecue events. So it is unfortunate that people don't think of Illinois as a barbecue state, but it truly is. And the type of barbecue covers a broad range. So it's our goal to hopefully just to educate people, put people either into restaurants if they want to visit different restaurants across the state, or help educate them on how to cook their own barbecue in their backyard.
So let's talk about sauce, David, because that always is either the contentious, depending, or the defining characteristic oftentimes of barbecue. What kind of sauces do we see across Illinois?
You bring up a good point because there are a group of people that like the dry rubs and sauce never touches their barbecue. Illinois, in general, is a sauce state. People generally put sauce on during the cooking or they add it after. And because of that, the sauces across Illinois, from the best we can estimate, there are about 30 to 50 commercial sauces made just in Illinois. And we know this from running the National Barbecue Sauce Championship here in the United States, which is one of the largest sauce championships that's a standalone event anywhere in the country, where we have upwards of 200 sauces submitted every year that we evaluate and taste and go through, covering everything from the sweet tomato sauces, which is pretty prevalent in Illinois, all the way down to some of the vinegar sauces or the mustard or mayonnaise-based sauces, which aren't as prominent in Illinois but certainly offer a little bit of variety. So the sauces in Illinois typically cover the sweet tomato and the spicy tomato sauces. Again, very similar to the Sweet Baby Ray profile of flavor that a lot of people like. So we've had an opportunity to taste, I've probably tasted upwards of 500 different sauces. So I like to think that I've got some exposure to what those sauces taste like and what makes a good sauce and a bad sauce. And people in Illinois have the unique advantage. Many retailers, including things as Ace Hardware or some of the other small food shops, carry a lot of these local regional sauces on behalf of some of these sauce companies across Illinois. So it's a real opportunity to go into just about any store and pick up one or two unique local barbecue sauces to taste.
That's David Rowe with the Illinois Barbecue Society. We asked you your favorite barbecue, so let's go to a caller or two before Nuno. I want to hear from, as we've been talking about sauce, what your favorite kind of sauce is. Let's start with our phone number, 1-800-222-9455. Ted from Springfield has a suggestion for us. Hey, Ted, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Ready to talk about barbecue? What's your favorite place to go to?
I love barbecue. I used to eat barbecue 4 days out of 5 days a week.
Wow.
Every lunch. Yeah, and the reason? They were closed on Monday. And so I couldn't get there.
And where'd you go, Ted?
Clay's Popeye's Barbecue on South Grand, just east of 11th Street, right here in Springfield.
Okay, so Clay's, you said.
Yeah, Clay's Pop. Everybody knows Popeye's Barbecue. Yeah,
all right.
It's been around for forever in Springfield.
Well, thanks for that. I appreciate that, Ted. Nuno, what about you? Where are some of your favorite places that you like to go Let's start with, we just heard from Springfield. Where are some other places you like to go in the Champaign area?
We actually have a quasi-barbecue capital of the state, which is in Murfreesboro, Illinois. And I believe they have 4 or 5 barbecue places in the medium-sized or small-sized town. So I like to go there quite a bit. There's also a place in Dwight, Illinois, Cherry Red Roosters, that makes excellent barbecue. And to answer your previous question, what kind of sauce do I like? I'm actually a fan of dry rub. I like to try different sauces. I typically ask to be put on the side, and I'm fairly adventurous, so I'll try just about anything. But I tend to like my barbecue with sauce on the side or without sauce at all.
Right. We could talk about this one for a whole hour. I bet people arguing about whether they want with sauce or no sauce with their barbecue. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. We're asking you to call in throughout the state. Tell us where your favorite barbecue places is. Let's go to Sam, who's also on the line from Springfield. Hey, Sam, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, thank you. Well, talking about Murfreesboro, I didn't know there were 4 or 5 places there, but after viewing the eclipse in Carbondale, I went over to Murfreesboro and stopped in the 17th Street Barbecue, which was packed with people from all over the state who went there after viewing the eclipse, and really great food. So that's I don't know what the other 3 places are in Murfreesboro, but that place is really good.
Oh, so 17th Street. Thanks for that, Sam. Nuno, you mentioned Pat's, right? And Pat,
right.
Actually, Pat's also going to be joining us later on in the hour as well. Murfreesboro in Southern Illinois, as Sam was just mentioning, obviously they've probably got lots of folks down there for the eclipse. So 17th Street was another one. What are the other two that you, Nuno, that you were
if
thinking
of? If my memory serves me correctly, another place is Bandana's Barbecue. There's another mom and pop's place. I want to say Jones. Perhaps it was the local thing, and the last one is escaping me, I'm afraid. The best thing to do really is just to travel there and discover them and test them all by yourself.
Yeah, Nuno, so how do you judge if you're just sort of driving around? So you don't do this. It sounds like you're not doing any social media or web research before you're trying to find a barbecue place. Are you doing this?
Every now and again, I might look at some social media customer reviews, but I tend not to. A lot of it has to do with my professional career and how much I travel inside the state for my job. I'm a tourism professor. And typically it's through word of mouth. You know, someone will tell me, hey, have you considered going to this place or that place? And that's more or less how I discover them.
So did you judge it just by exterior appearance? Because I have a judge by exterior appearance and smell, whether or not I think it's good.
I think the smell is very good. I'm not sure exterior appearance is necessary. Sometimes in the most unassuming places you find
No, that's what I mean. Barbecue. Oh, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah,
absolutely.
I want it to look fancy. I feel like if it looks fancy, it might not be as good.
I think
that's
that
my
ultimately
opinion.
It has to do with taste. If it's good barbecue, I think smell is a great indicator. If there's a lot of people hanging out, if you see a lot of people driving off the road to wait for this barbecue, if they run out of barbecue, that's another very good sign. And you have to taste a lot of barbecue, which is quite of a delicious endeavor.
Well, David, I want to ask you your tips on that in a minute for how you go through tasting all of these different sauces. But let's get to a couple other folks with recommendations. Let's go to Dan, who's also on the line from Springfield. Hey, Dan, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Where do you recommend?
I recommend Kags, KAGS, out of Danville. They basically do most of their stuff out of a truck and move it around town. I think they may have a location there, too. I've never been to it. But.
And what kind of style is it? What is it like?
It's they do a lot of the sweeter sauce, but I always get that on the side. I just find it to be very, very flavorful. I mean, it's just good stuff. Prefer the chicken and the ribs, but those are things they do real well.
Okay.
For years and years and years and years.
So that's Kags in Danville. Thanks.
Kags.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. That's a good one.
You bet.
So, David, David, you've tasted 500 maybe or so barbecue sauces in your lifetime?
I'd have to estimate it somewhere near 500 different sauces that I've had an opportunity to taste, yes.
Right. So I'm curious, it's very interesting nowadays. I feel like we're also seeing a lot of different things, whether we're talking about Black Dog and Champagne or Smoke. in Chicago, like lots of different other flavor kind of elements that are being incorporated into sauce. I'm thinking in particular of different like kind of like fruits, like cherries and things like that. Is that maybe like a more modern thing, or has that been a traditional part of barbecue?
No, I think it's a little bit more modern thing as people have tried to differentiate their product from others. They add in different flavors, trying to explore different flavor profiles. Some of them have been successful. Some of them have, frankly, been a disaster. Some of the sauces, I have to admit, are horrendous and very difficult to even eat.
Right. Really, you shouldn't mess with it too much, right, is basically probably what you're saying.
Well, I think small steps until you serve it to friends and family, see if they like it. And most sauces start out that way, and then they go to the local market or the Sunday farmer's market where they start to bottle it and sell it there. And if it takes off, if people like it, that's a great indicator. But small steps are probably better. Some of the better ones that have won in the past, we have Southern Bells, I think they're out of Pennsylvania, and they had a blueberry sauce that did really well. They won, I believe, this year as a national champion with a peach sauce. So there are some flavor profiles that people really like, as well as the traditional sauces.
And what, when we think we're, because we're in Illinois, David, do you think we get, like when you're talking about Sweet Baby Ray's up in Chicago, that's a really sweet, more southern style versus, I wonder what we're seeing across the state, if you can get Memphis, which is more, or Texas or Kansas City, St. Louis. Can you basically get all of those different styles throughout Illinois?
I think that you can. Nuno probably can provide a lot more information on that than I can. But I think that there's a slight variation as you move further south. It does become regional, and so you get the sauces that are not as sweet. I think the sweet sauces probably are much more prevalent to the northern part of the state with the Sweet Baby Ray's area. Particularly up here, it came out of Chicago. Sweet Baby Ray's restaurants, there's two of them in the area up here that serve very good food. Interestingly, Dave Raymond, his nephew, Deuce Raymond, has a couple of sauces out right now that he has won some very prevalent national awards on, including this year he won the Illinois People's Taste Award in the barbecue sauce contest, which I'll just mention very briefly. Our contest is a double-blind contest. The judges have no idea whose sauce they're tasting, and he came out very well. So there's a little bit of family lineage, I think, going on there. But definitely the sauces to the north, a little bit more prevalent on the sweeter side.
Now, you guys are working on putting together a barbecue trail coming out next year for people who want a road trip throughout the state. David, can you tell us about that?
Yes, we've borrowed liberally from the wine industry, both in how we approach the tasting of the sauces, looking at appearance, texture, a savory component, flavor profiles, etc., and also the concept in the food tourism idea of creating a trail or simply a collection of restaurants that people, if they chose to, they could drive from restaurant to restaurant along the trail and explore different barbecue. We've added in restaurants, not only just the most famous ones, but also ones that offer a unique aspect. For example, maybe they're a small, out-of-the-way place. They run out of barbecue by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's a place you'll have to get there early for lunch and try out some of their barbecue. Or in the Chicago area, even the types of cooking methods. There's an aquarium cooker, which looks like a big fish tank that is kind of unique to the Chicago area, and it takes a very good pit master to run that. It offers a slightly different method of cooking, so the style of cooking can change. So we look for unique aspects to add to this, and we have an outer trail and an inner trail. The outer trail covers the entire state in roughly a loop of about 1,000 miles. The inner trail focuses on the northern Illinois area, and those are a trail that we anticipate having posted on our website early January to February.
Well, we have to take a break. I want to thank David Rowe for taking some time to join us. He's the board member with the Illinois Barbecue Society. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Nuno Ribeiro and you, your calls. Some of you who are calling, we're going to get to you just on the other side of this. If you hang on for a few minutes, stay tuned. We're talking barbecue on this Labor Day edition of the 21st. Our phone number, 1-800-222-9455. Stay tuned.
The The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking barbecue ahead of this Labor Day weekend. We're talking barbecue all across Illinois. In a minute, we're going to be speaking with a couple of the chefs from restaurants who've already been named as favorite places. We're taking your calls as well. Let's go to Kent in Charleston. Kent, what's your recommendation of your favorite place to eat barbecue in Illinois?
Well, we've got a nice one here in Charleston. It's called Smokey's House Barbecue. And they serve, you know, brisket and pork, and they also have chicken and turkey and sausage and stuff like that. The thing I kind of think a little bit unique is that they also give you a whole bucket with different kinds of sauces, from hot mustard to sweet, there at your table, so you can add more if you want.
Okay, thanks for that, Kat. Let's go to Janet. Hey, Janet, you're in DeKalb. What's your suggestion for Northern Illinois? Oh, it looks like we lost Janet. Janet, call back so you can tell us where to go in the DeKalb area. We've got George from Champaign on the line. Hey, George, what's your comment?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey there.
Hey, I just had a quick comment. I know that we're, in Illinois, the land of the Chicago-style hot dog, and ketchup seems to get a pretty bad rap. But I don't think that a lot of people realize that most of your barbecue sauces, like your main ingredient, is going to be ketchup.
Thanks for that. That's a good point, George. That's George in Champaign. He's right. Even in Illinois, we need to put ketchup in our barbecue sauce, even if we're not going to put it on our hot dogs. Let's actually bring in a couple of chefs from these restaurants. They are here to share their stories and offer some advice. So you can call us as well if you have questions for them. Benjamin Grice is the owner and chef of the Humble Hog in Paxton. That's about 30 miles north of Champaign. Pat Burke is the owner of and chef of Pat's Barbecue and Catering in Murfreesboro in Southern Illinois. Hey, Ben. Hey, Pat. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Good morning to you.
Hey, Pat, let's start with you. We were just talking to Dave and Rowe about from the Illinois Barbecue Society. He was talking a little bit about some of the competitions they put on. You opened your restaurant in 2002. I understand you've been competing since the late 80s. What first sparked your passion for barbecue?
Well, we started in 1988, and through the competition barbecue, we got off into, like I say, in 2002. I've been doing barbecue since I was a kid on the thing. So, of course, Murfreesboro is now the barbecue capital of Illinois, too.
And we've been talking about sauce. Can you tell us a little bit about the sauce and where you stand on the sauce and where it goes and what your style is?
Yeah, we've got a sweet sauce, and it's whoever was talking to you before. Ketchup is the main part of it, you know, with the ketchup and vinegar, Worcestershire, and all the seasonings and everything. But it's a sweet sauce. It seems like I do a lot of cooking down south, and it's more into hard vinegar base, you know. But up in this part of the country, it seems to get sweeter.
Ben, I understand you were originally working in fine dining in Boston, and then you moved to Paxton about 4 years ago. What brought you there?
Actually, I grew up in Paxton, graduated from Paxton, and then ended up in Arizona going to chef school out there, and then Boston as a chef, and kind of bounced around. And then when my wife and I had our first kid on the way, we decided to move back where the grandparents were, and that was a unique experience coming back to a town that I hadn't been a part of in so long. And it was neat to reconnect with everybody and see, you know, what downtown needed and try to, you know, jump in and do my part. You know, it's a small town. It's 4,500 people. So opening our barbecue restaurant downtown was a very big deal for the whole area. And, you know, now we draw people in from all around. So it's been really good for the town and really good for my family. You know, it's a, it's definitely a family restaurant. So
that's Benjamin Rice, as we're talking to him, owner and chef of the Humble Hog restaurant in Paxton. Pat Burke is on the line with us as well from Murphy's Bureau. He's owner and chef of Pat's Barbecue and Catering. Nuno Ribeiro's in our Urbana studio with us. He's teaches in the Department of Recreation, Sport, and Tourism at the University of Illinois. Nuno, I wanted to ask you about food tourism. What kind of impact do you think even one good restaurant in a small town can have on the local economy?
It has an enormous and often understated impact, because not only does it drive traffic just for day trippers, which we designate as excursionists, but often it's the catalyst to explore the area. So, for instance, next to Murfreesboro, we have Shawnee National Forest. How many people knew, for instance, that in a small town like Paxton, there's a beautiful Carnegie Library, which is just a little architectural gem? And I think it's not really understood by the public at large the immense economic boom that a very good restaurant, which is a destination in itself, an attraction in itself, does for the local economy. So all of these initiatives, which are commendable, things like barbecue trails, like more publicity for locally owned restaurants, especially in smaller places across the state, they're incredibly beneficial to us.
Let's go to one last recommendation, if we can, as we're talking about that. Heather from Oglesby. Hey, Heather, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, where's your favorite place to go for barbecue?
You know what? It's relatively new. It's in LaSalle, Illinois. It's about 10 minutes away from Starved Rock State Park, and they just serve some really amazing house-made barbecue. All their sauces are house-made. They've got a great variety from sweet to spicy. They've got a bourbon sauce and a Carolina mop sauce that's just amazing.
What's it called, Heather?
Hayes Smokehouse.
Okay, thanks for that.
Thank you.
Sure. Pat, can I ask you about Murfreesboro? We were just talking, Heather was just talking about Starved Rock. Nuno was just mentioning Shawnee National Forest. What do you think went into, a couple people have mentioned now Murfreesboro being the barbecue capital of Illinois. How do you think that came about, all of these different barbecue places in Murfreesboro?
Well, barbecue started in Murfreesboro at the turn of the century, and it's been pretty popular all along. And then we came along in competition barbecue and won three world championships, and ended up being two of us here in town, Mike Mills and myself, ended up on a team that did that. And the name got around real good, but it wasn't just us. This came up from the early 1900s, and there had been a lot of barbecue places in Murfreesboro, but really noted for it.
And is there a particular, would you say that you all have a particular sauce or style that you think that everybody kind of shares?
Yeah, there are just so many ingredients known to mankind on this sauce and everything. It's the amount that goes into them and what it amounts to. But and then the sweetness of it or the vinegar taste on it, one of the two.
Right. And so is your preference, would you say yours goes closer to more the sweeter than the vinegar?
Yes, it's sweet sauce, and we've got a hint of apple in it. See, this is apple country around Murfreesboro, Illinois. It's called Apple City. And there's a big apple festival here each year in September. And so we got a hint of apple in ours, too.
So, Benjamin, I understand for you guys up in Paxton, you kind of focus a lot also on your brisket, right? What do you think, and how would you describe the sauce that goes along with your brisket?
You bet. Actually, the sauce that goes on the brisket, I kind of took more of an approach of I wanted some tannins in it. Kind of wanted the sauce to just really enhance the meat and not mask it. It is a sweet sauce, kind of like what Pat was saying with his. Just it's got a lot of flavor. You know, we use the freshest spices we can get, just like Pat or anyone else would want to. One of the differentiators with our sauce, we do use a cold pressed organic tomato when we make that. So I like it. It's got enough acidity. It's a pretty well-balanced sauce, but like I said, it doesn't mask the meat. It's really there to enhance it. So, yeah.
Does it make you sad when people put too much sauce on your brisket? It sounds like it would.
You know what? If you want to come in and put ketchup or whatever you want on it, it doesn't affect me emotionally.
But you just think it won't taste as good.
Yeah, well, you know, we want you to enjoy it however you want to enjoy it. bottom line. But we do get people in from, you know, hey, I'm from Texas. I don't want any sauce on it at all. That's fine, too. We can put the sauce on the side or not at all, whatever. We do serve our sauce warm. So, yeah, you get people that want it drowned in sauce, and you get people that want it with no sauce. It's really fine either way. And
Pat, what about, Oh, go ahead, Ben. Ahead, Benjamin.
I just wanted to say to Pat, if he can hear me, I love his sauce. Pat's restaurant was one of the first barbecue restaurants I went to in Illinois. And I actually got to meet Pat. This was several years ago. I'm sure he doesn't remember. But I just want to say thanks, Pat. You're doing a great job. I really love this place.
I appreciate that, Ben. You know, as Ben said, the meat will stand on its own, you know, and you put put a lot of sauce on it, but not at all. We have a lot of people that they do not want any sauce on it. We have a dry rub we call a sweet and spicy, and they put a little of that on it, but some of them don't want the sauce at all, you know, and then others want to drown it with it.
So both of you gentlemen, I do not want to insult your craft and the time that you take and the care that you prepare with your sauce, but I will ask for those of us who are home cooks and home barbecue, people who are thinking about maybe making something for their families this weekend and they don't have your expertise or your tools, what's the best kind of advice you have for home barbecue chefs? Benjamin, can we start with you?
Sure thing. I'd say start online. I mean, there's an endless resource there with anyone can Google. You can get a really simple recipe with, you know, three or four ingredients, or if you want to go to the grocery store and you know, get 15 ingredients, that's fine too. But, you know, you'll see sauces where you can mix them, you know, just a few ingredients together cold and make yourself a sauce, or you'll have sauces where you got to cook them down a little. There's sauces where you want to put bourbon in them or whatever. Sky's the limit. You could spend your whole career and still not cover it all. So if you're a home cook, pick something that, you know, is more on your level as far as what you have to work with tool-wise, as well as, you know, what your local grocery store will carry. But you don't have to go crazy to make a good sauce. Just like Pat said, you want something that's well-balanced with, you know, enough acidity, so enough vinegar or enough sweet, so you can use molasses or, you know, and ketchup can be the body of it if you want. But they're not hard to make. It's as hard as you want to make it. So, yeah, I'd say check it out online and go from there.
Pat, what about the meat? What kind of meat would you recommend and what kind of advice would you have for folks in terms of barbecuing?
Well, we do Boston butts for our pulled pork. And of course, we do a loin back rib. And then we do the brisket, too, also. And back to that sauce thing just a little bit here. A lot of people will take something like the Kansas City sauce or the Sweet Baby Ray sauce, something that's been known all over, and then they'll modify that, you know. One thing you got to watch on that is when they're finishing it off, do not go on the sauce real early. Hold it off to the last 15 or 20 minutes because it has a tendency to burn with you on it then.
That makes a lot of sense. Obviously, you want to be careful about what you put on the grill. And obviously, because I guess you want to be careful about the sugar content there, right? Because that's just going to caramelize a little bit too early. Okay. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. That's Pat Burke. He's the owner and chef of Pat's Barbecue and Catering in Murfreesboro. I want to thank Benjamin Rice as well. He's owner and chef of the Humble Hog Restaurant in Paxton. And Nuno Ribeiro, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Recreation, Sport, and Tourism. Sorry, Benjamin Grice. Nuno, any final tips for everybody about if they're traveling around this weekend?
Travel, get off the beaten path, and eat good barbecue.
That sounds good. I think everybody, Benjamin, Pat, Nuno, you probably made everyone who's listening is now going to have barbecue for lunch because I think you made us all really hungry. Thanks so much, gentlemen. Have a great holiday weekend. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Nyla.
All right, thank you very much.
That does it for us this week. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. If you have Alexa and you've got NPR One enabled, we're pretty easy to find. Just tell her, ask NPR One to play The 21st. All of those links, directions for Alexa, every other way to contact us. If you want to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, follow us on social media. All you have to remember is our website, 21stshow.org. By the way, if you do follow us on Twitter, search for 21stshow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. When we're not on air, you can follow us for the latest Illinois news. If you search for us on Facebook, look for The 21st and like us. You can also comment on what we're working on, post questions or comments you'd want us to ask on air. We're produced by Christine Herman, Alan Montecilio, and Robert Hawley. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Thanks to Joe Yuda and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help. And special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo, broadcasting today from Northwestern University's Medill School in downtown Chicago. Thanks for listening to The 21st.